And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus on this Thursday, January 30th. And man, it doesn't feel like it outside. Temperatures across the area in the mid-30s. We even have some spots in the Southern Valley approaching 40. While there's fog in the far Northern Valley and temperatures only in the 20s. So depending where you're at, got a wide variety of weather across the area. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki along with our Ag Director, Bridget Riedel. And Bridget, where is Waldo, where is Bridget today?
Today, I am actually back in my office, so I get just a moment of reprieve of being on the radio.
I did not even see you on the live stream. I thought you were on the road today.
Nope. And, you know, to those yesterday, we really apologize. We had a lot of situations happening behind the scenes. I don't think everybody realizes that we have one guy in the sound booth who is running all of the lines for guests, for Dean and I, answering phone calls. And so we apologize when chaos happens. Addison does a masterful job of keeping all that running, but sometimes he just can't resurrect technology when it fails. So yeah, we do our best.
Let's not have a repeat of that today, but that's okay.
Oh, goodness.
You know,
no.
Technology, no. That happens. It's going to happen from time to time. That's for sure.
It does, and especially because you and I are very mobile. I spend a lot of time on the road as ag director, and so sometimes it just doesn't work in our favor. But today is working in your favor for the weather.
Yes, it is. I mean, I'm telling you, temperatures out there, like I said, unseasonably mild. Now, we're not going to reach any records today. Those are in the 40s. But, I mean, still, for the end of January, when we're looking at temperatures that are in the mid and upper 30s, that's not too bad either. A lot of sunshine today, light winds. Currently, we're at 34 degrees, expecting a high a few degrees warmer, about 36 or so, with winds generally light out of the west-southwest, 5 to 10. Clouds will be on the increase tonight. We'll see a cold front push into the area and lows down into the teens, and winds will turn to the north at about 10 to 20. And we're stuck in the teens tomorrow as northeast winds increase 10 to 20. And again, steady temps in the teens. Then we're keeping an eye on a potential clipper system as we head into the upcoming weekend. It's a pretty strong one. There's a couple of question marks on it. We know we're going to get wind. We know we're going to get some snow. The question is, how bad is it going to be and timing of it? So right now, it looks like we'll see a couple rounds of snow. We'll see a little bit on Saturday morning into early afternoon as warm air tries to push in advance of this clipper system. So that'll bring us a little light snow then. And then we're in the upper 20s to low 30s during the day on Saturday. Saturday night will be quiet until Sunday morning. We'll get in on the backside of this clipper system with another burst of snow. And then windy conditions Sunday afternoon. And we're talking wind gusts over 30 out of the north. So areas that do pick up, let's say, 2 inches or more of snow, we're going to have some difficult travel on Sunday. So if you have any travel plans on Sunday, kind of keep up to date on the forecast. Saturday will be a little slippery with that morning snow, but nothing like Sunday is expected to be. Now, this isn't going to be a huge storm by any means, but across the area, honestly, anywhere between a trace and like 3.5 inches of snow. Now, where that trace falls, obviously, we're not going to have too much in the way of problems. But where that 2 to 3 inches of snow lines up, that's where we're going to see some slippery to difficult travel on Sunday due to the winds. So where is the band of the 2 to 3 inches of snow going to line up? Our models are mostly in agreement with about 1 to 2 here in the FM area. About 2 inches in the Northern Valley and up to 3 inches in Lakes Country. It's a little bit less in the Southern Valley. Now, our European model, which is usually one of the more accurate models that we use in terms of short-term forecasting, continues to only pump out about a trace to half an inch throughout the FM area. So if that's the case, we'll end up dodging a bullet. But again, I'm not totally sold on that yet because most of the other models are printing out at least 1 to 2 inches. And again, we get a couple inches of fresh snow and 30-mile-an-hour winds. It could be a little bit tricky on Sunday. So we'll fine-tune the forecast more as we head into tomorrow.
Oh, and that fine tuning is going to be much appreciated, as well as it's appreciated that this weather update comes to us from Ryan Bonesack. He's with Equitable AgriFinance. Ryan is waiting for your call at 701-261-6529. You can certainly visit with him about restructuring your balance sheet and working on more, providing more working capital. So if you are a farmer or rancher and want to visit about it, you can call Ryan Bonesack at Equitable AgriFinance. So many things going on these days. One of them, of course, is that you can watch us today on our live streams for Facebook, YouTube, as well as Acres TV. And let's not forget, there's two things I need to make sure that you are marking your calendars for. One is that Giving Hearts Day is February 13th. We have lots of ag-related charities that you can be working with, whether it's North Dakota FFA, North Dakota 4-H, Farm Rescue. These are all benefits to our greater community by supporting them. So mark your calendars, February 13th, that's a Thursday, all day long. You can be looking to donate cash or sign up to donate your time. Sometimes your time is just as valuable. And I had a teacher this morning email me from Milbank, South Dakota. She said, are you still looking for more assistant ag kids? Because I think I have one. So I'm excited that hopefully I will be seeing an application from yet another student. And I'm certainly going to continue to take those. I'm looking for a student once a month. I need someone to join us on air to be our assistant for the day on the show to help talk about topics, interview guests, and so much more. So if you are in high school involved in agriculture from freshman, sophomore in high school to about freshman, sophomore in college, I want to hear from you. So you can send me emails, ag@flagfamily.com, and I'll make sure to send you the application. You can also call us today if you have any questions, 701-293-9000, and you can reach Dean, weather@flagfamily, just like I'm ag@flagfamily.com. All right. I think I got through all the housekeeping items. We kind of have to make sure we do all those things. Whew, there's always a lot of cool things we're doing, though.
Right.
That's even better.
No doubt about it. And I want to give another shout out to the group down in Lisbon area. Yesterday, I went down there and was talking about the LRC and how it can impact and how it can really help our ag community when it comes to planting, harvesting, spraying, all that good stuff. And boy, what a great group of people down there, Bridget. And a lot of questions, which I love. I love answering questions about the LRC. And again, if you're one of the groups down there, if you're one of the people that were down there and you have any further questions, feel free to shoot me an email, weather@flagfamily.com, and we can answer those questions for you. But a lot of, you know, hey, what's this spring look like? What, you know, is it going to be a warmer summer than last year? Because last year, a lot of them didn't have, we want the heat for summer for the corn. And, you know, are we going to be able to have something like we did 2 years ago, instead of kind of a cooler summer like last summer? So answered a lot of questions, and hopefully everybody was having a good time. I know I did down there for sure.
You can't help but have fun when you're having lunch and talking farming.
Right? Exactly. And the LRC, it's a trifecta.
That's right. It's all those things. So, you know, I said earlier, we always have a lot of cool things going on. Here's one, and this is taking place in South Dakota, so I'll let them have a cool thing too. Ha ha, South Dakota. I got to give you a little trouble there. They just recently held the Lamb Bonanza at SDSU. Okay. What in the world is this, yeah, right? So the Lamb Bonanza is a fundraiser that they do during one of their basketball games. And there are literally four lambskins. So if you Google this, you will see or use whatever search engine you want. You will see the picture of the cheerleaders holding up these lamb hides, and they are dyed either Jack's blue or yellow. And then they have their logo on them, and they were sold off at auction, and they raised about $6,700 for scholarships for students.
Wow.
Now, additionally, you could buy lamb products that day, scarves, blankets, all those types of things. This is put on by the South Dakota wool and sheep producers because they want to certainly make sure to highlight what they do in the state of South Dakota. And then you could go to the concession stand and you could order yourself a lamb slider and other lamb favorites while you were enjoying the basketball game. So that was the 33rd annual Lamb Bonanza. If you're going to find a way to highlight a different protein product, there was a great way to do it. So I thought that worked out really, really neat.
Very interesting. That's awesome.
Yes. Well, awesome. So that was one thing that they did. Additionally, I think we got to remember that with the weather that we are having, it's a little brisk out there. So at least it will be next week. Today is going super well as far as weather's concerned. Tomorrow and coming up soon, we're going to see a change in weather. And make sure to think ahead again about bedding down those animals. We want to make sure that we have straw, especially for the bulls, the bucks, if we're talking about sheep, that type of thing, because we want to make sure that we have no frostbite for those critters. Take care of them while you can. So especially if we see those winds that are going to be going on, as Dean talked about next week. So that's one thing that we can do. Also, we're going to change their diets a little bit so that we up what they're getting for protein, high protein, high fibers, to keep that engine inside their bodies running to keep them warm. So keep that weather going. Now, we are soon to have a guest joining us, and that will be Neil Dahlstrom. I'm excited to talk to Neil because of the job that he has, and he's really been sort of fun to follow and listen to. Neil is the archivist, or historian, if you will, for John Deere. He's written books about tractors, but also he has much to share about the exhibits and the types of things that they are doing to preserve history at John Deere. And for all of you tractor buffs out there, no matter what your favorite color of machine, I think you will find this kind of fun to just check into what's going on and what's good history tidbits. You never know when you got to win at a trivia game, right? So we will do that when we return. We'll get a chance to visit with our guest, Neil Dahlstrom, right after the American Ag Network. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. So very glad that we get to have you joining us today, as well as our guest. And before we get to our guest, we have a sponsor that we want to make sure we highlight today, and that is JLA Insurance. Nate Thorsrud from Grandin not only runs JLA Insurance, but he farms as well. He has roots in agriculture, literally, as well as in the insurance business, doing it since 2004. If you are looking for changes in your crop insurance, hail, or anything else, you can contact Nate Thorsrud. Again, he is JLA Insurance. You can email him, nate@jlainsurance.com, or just call him directly, 701-371-0311. So our guest today that's joining us is Neil Dahlstrom, and thrilled to visit with you, Neil. I've had the opportunity to hear you speak on a podcast, and I've kind of been following along to all the things that you do, but could you introduce yourself to our listeners today?
Yeah, and thanks for having me. So I'm Neil Dahlstrom. I'm the Branded Properties and Heritage Manager at John Deere. So I manage the company's historical collections, the archives, and what we call our branded properties, the John Deere Pavilion, Tractor and Engine Museum, and the John Deere Historic Site.
Holy cow. That's a lot. I mean, how many exhibits does that actually cover?
Boy, it depends on your definition of an exhibit, but it's hundreds, everything from, individual tractors, some owned by Deere and Company, some on loan, to an exhibit we opened at the Pavilion this past May, on the history of John Deere toys, which was a really exciting exhibit to kind of plan and put together.
Where did you start? Where do some of these exhibits come from? Was it just hanging out in people's offices as John Deere has grown as a corporation?
Yeah, that's some of it. And I'm fortunate to have an incredible team of people who think about these things all the time. The toy exhibit was, we kind of laugh about it because as equipment gets bigger, our museums aren't getting any larger. So someone had an idea of how we were lamenting how we wish we could shrink the equipment. And then someone had the idea, well, actually, we kind of can. We can do an exhibit on John Deere toys. so that's kind of where that came from. And what was fascinating was we started thinking about doing, well, we could just do kind of an evolution of John Deere toys. And then we decided to just start asking collectors. And we asked four collectors to give us their top 10 list of what they thought the top 10 John Deere toys were. And I was kind of surprised because most of them were different. And the learning was that people collect for different reasons. Sometimes it was the first toy you got as a kid. Sometimes it was because it was the most valuable or you're collecting a particular series. So that really altered how we went about it. And it wasn't, how can we get the most toys in this exhibit? It was, let's explore what toys mean to people, the different categories of toys. So it really took on a different form than we initially intended.
And Neil, what is your, a couple of questions here. What's your favorite exhibit? And what currently is, you mentioned, you know, some people collect toys for money purposes too. What's the most expensive collectible going for right now? And what is it?
Boy, most expensive collectible, I actually don't have an answer for that, but I have an answer for why I don't have an answer to that.
Okay.
the reason being is I'm an archivist. And so, you know, my job is to collect and preserve and make accessible records. Archivists have a code of ethics, which says that we do not collect for monetary value. I don't go to auctions. I'm not a licensed appraiser, so I don't appraise. So I actually don't keep tabs on any of this. We keep records for historical purposes and not for financial reasons. So I deliberately stay away from it, believe it or not.
Okay.
So that doesn't answer your question, but that's why I don't know.
No, that's fine. That's fine.
So, Neil, I need to ask, where are you keeping all of these things? Are you keeping all of the oldest records that you can find within John Deere, all the way through toys and newer items? Where are you keeping it all, and why are you keeping it all? What are you going to do with it besides have someone be able to stroll through it like a museum?
Yeah, so the archives, actually next year will be our 50th anniversary of the John Deere archives. Which sounds like we've been around for a long time, and we have, but in John Deere terms, that means the company was over 130 years old before we established an archive. We are fortunate that we had a library since the early 20th century that kept a lot of the historical documents, but we keep things for historical purposes. We want to be able to demonstrate that something happened, that something we're talking about happen in the way that we think it happened. We want to be able to validate dates or maybe when we opened a sales branch in a particular country. And authenticity is important. It's one thing to say something happened, but to be able to pull out the letter written by William Butterworth in 1917 to prove that it happened that way is really important to us. The archives is located in East Moline, Illinois, so we're about 10-minute drive from world headquarters. Primarily because we take up a lot of real estate. We've got, about 10,000 boxes of records going back to deeds signed by John Deere, canceled checks, to photographs and films and service literature and advertising, the Furrow magazine, which dates back to 1895. We have every issue since 1897. So it takes up a pretty big footprint.
And, Neil, we've got an email question from one of our listeners asking, has John Deere always been the color green, or do they make different color tractors?
Yeah, that's a good question. John Deere tractors, for the most part, have been green and yellow. Very early on, there were some hints of red. For example, maybe where there was a decal. Or something, and that was just so that name was legible and could stand out. Prior to the John Deere tractor, we know green and yellow was used predominantly at least since 1905. I think it was certainly earlier. The problem is we can't prove it because we don't have color photography to help us prove it.
Okay, that's a good reason.
Yeah. You don't think about those things now. That's the thing.
No. So, Neil, first of all those issues of the Furrow, that's fantastic. I was with part of a group that was recently in the Furrow, and I can't tell you how excited I am to know that I might be at the archive someday. And what if I want to see that copy? Can anyone come in and see the John Deere archives, or what kind of special clearance do I need?
Yeah, it's yes, we're available for research. I think the hard part for most people is you have to physically come here. It's not an operation where you can say, hey, can you scan me every issue of the furrow and email them to me? That's typically the request. Happens every day. But, yeah, if someone's doing research, we just kind of go through an interview process. What are you working on? And then we work to get you in here because we first want to identify records that may be useful. And that way we save you a trip if we don't have anything that's going to be useful for you. So that's a big part of the process.
Well, that would be true. There's only so many things that the folks on your staff can do. And all right, for all of those questions that so many of you had, there's a lot of gearheads listening, a lot of tractor fans. You all are welcome to call us at 701-293-9000 in order to ask your questions to Neil. And we will continue doing that after our bottom of the hour news. Stay tuned. We're visiting with Neil Dahlstrom. He is the John Deere archivist. All right, welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. And our discussion today is with Neil Dahlstrom. He is the archivist for John Deere. And we were talking about the color because Dean asked a great question. Has the color always been green and yellow? And we had a listener send me a text message over here, Neil, and he said, except for John Deere construction and utility equipment, which would be orange or yellow, and actually, are you doing the history of those product lines or just the agricultural tractors?
Yeah, that's a great question. We're responsible for the history of the company worldwide. So that includes John Deere. It includes any acquisitions that are made over the years. So you think about places like Horicon, Wisconsin, that became part of John Deere in 1912. When we acquired the Van Brunt Manufacturing Company, so we have the history of the Van Brunt Company. So it's kind of all of the above over the full evolution of John Deere as a company.
When you think about some of the most surprising items that you might have in your collection, is there something that comes to mind that was maybe sought after and you were able to find it, or just one item that you've come across and said, I didn't think we'd have this?
Yeah, well, one thing that I've learned is now sought after, but I think we acquired one before others were looking for it, was we have a John Deere snowmobile helmet from the early 1970s, and it's a green and yellow helmet that has white antlers on the side of it, or what looks like antlers. And why I was looking for it was on the back of it, it says, nothing runs like a deer. And I think it's one of the first times that slogan was ever used on merchandise.
We're in an area where John Deere snowmobiles were somewhat prevalent. So you have a lot of enthusiasts who are probably real excited to see pictures of that helmet if you have them, Neil.
Yeah, and actually you can go see that helmet down at the John Deere Pavilion. So we've got it on exhibit right now.
That's fantastic. Now, not only doing all the work that you do for John Deere, you have also become really a foreknown expert in regards to tractors overall. And you've written a book, I believe it was called Tractor Wars. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, happy to. Tractor Wars came out about 2 years ago. It's called Tractor Wars, John Deere, Henry Ford International Harvester and the Birth of Modern Agriculture. And it really takes place in the 1910s and the 1920s. And I was really trying to understand why farm tractors exist, which sounds kind of silly to say, but they didn't have to exist. And I was really curious how long adoption took, all the different machine forms, what marketing looked like, and what company executives were doing, and just some of the decisions that were being made. So it really covers that period, and it's kind of bookended around Henry Ford, actually, his announcement of getting into the tractor business, and then Ford essentially dropping out in 1928. Of course, we know he comes back a few years later, but it kind of follows primarily those three companies, as well as the hundreds of others who are trying to compete and get into the tractor business in the early 20th century.
Absolutely. Neil, do you get folks that call you up and say, I have a story for you. This is something maybe you want to research or learn about, or I have things in my farm, shop, house that I've come across that might be a fit for you and the archive. Do you get those calls regularly, or will you take them? Do you want more items?
We get those calls every day, actually. We probably get offered 6 to 10 pieces of equipment or memorabilia a week. And we always want the call. It's actually become somewhat rare that someone has something that fits into the scope of our collection. So it's not about whether we want it or don't want it, but we have things we're looking for or gaps we want to fill. So sometimes it's based on whether we have something in the collection or we're looking to fill a gap. Like, say we have an entire year of advertising, but we're missing one piece. So we're looking for that one piece to fill out the collection. So that's what we tend to be on the lookout for. And we always like to know what's out there, because oftentimes if we don't have it, I don't know what's out there.
Oh, that's true. It's not like you have a missing in action list of items to go find. You just don't even know they exist.
Right. I like to think the world's perfect and that there's an inventory list of everything that was made in every year. And so we can just go, yep, we don't have this, we don't have this. But the reality is we often just don't know. And then someone, you know, digs something up, or they find it in the back of their garage or in their attic. So we always like to know what people are finding.
Do you take, or do you have a building with full-size equipment in it that you use as part of your archives?
We do, actually. We've got a pretty substantial collection. We have equipment on exhibit in about 30 locations across North America. So that's everything from John Deere factories to, you know, our own museums and properties, the Pavilion, the Tractor and Engine Museum. We've got equipment on display at World Headquarters. So we've got a lot that's out, and anything that's not out is in storage. So we can go to that when we're working on new exhibits and kind of pull from that collection, or supplement that with something maybe a collector or a customer is willing to loan to us for a while.
I got another question.
Okay,
but go ahead.
I was just going to ask Neil, what is the oldest piece of equipment that's archived right now that you guys have?
So in our collection, we have a plow that was built by John Deere in 1853.
Wow.
That's the oldest in our collection. There is a John Deere plow at the Smithsonian that was built in 1838. So it was one of the first three plows that he built. And that was actually donated to the Smithsonian by John Deere in 1938.
Wow.
Which brings me to the question I wanted to ask. Do you loan things out? You know, if there's a museum that says we need a specific John Deere item, would you put it to loan on us? Can that be done?
It depends. We've done it in the past, and it mostly depends on a lot of logistics. And, you know, just things like insurance and shipping and transportation and all those sorts of things. So there are, you know, a lot of costs associated with this. We wouldn't charge anyone to do that. So it kind of comes and goes. 10 years ago, we were doing that a lot. We haven't done that a lot lately. Mm-hmm. But, we're kind of open to that, because the goal is for us is that people see all of these things. And, So we do our best to get these out into the world.
When you were growing up, Neil, were you a farm kid who thought, I can't wait to work for John Deere and collect all their history? Was this a surprise when you took this type of a job?
It actually was a surprise. So I am not a farm kid, and I did not know John Deere had an archive. My dad actually worked for International Harvester. And so I grew up, I can trace relatives that worked for either John Deere, Minneapolis, Moline, or International Harvester back to the late 19th century. But but it was typically like in the shop. My two great-grandfathers were both engineers at the John Deere Harvester Works. But yeah, I didn't grow up on the farm, and I went to school to be an archivist. I wanted to work in an archive and just happened to find my way to John Deere.
You've said a couple of things talking about the Harvester Works, the pavilion. What's the difference between all those things? If someone is on a mission to come and see many of the pieces of John Deere, and I know you said you're in East Moline, close to world headquarters, what are some of those things that people can see, and what's the difference between some of them?
Yeah, the first thing I'd say is download our app. It's called Visit John Deere. You can do virtual tours. You can plan a trip to the pavilion, the Tractor and Engine Museum, the historic site. So if you're coming to the Quad Cities, which is where Moline is, or I'm sorry, John Deere is, and we're based in Moline, definitely the John Deere Harvester Works. You can kind of drive around the outside. I don't think it's open for tours right now, but you can go to the John Deere Pavilion. Definitely just go to Deere.com and or go to visit JohnDeere.com. That's where you can kind of organize your trip and see what's available. That would be my best advice, would be the app and the website. Because what happens is sometimes factories are on shutdown. Maybe they're not available for a tour. You want to make sure you kind of do your research before you just show up.
You have an app for tours. I had no idea. That's very cool, Neil.
Yeah, we're trying to find all the different ways to get all this out to people.
Well, I'm glad we can be a part of that, because it sounds to me like there's so much to experience. And really, when you think about it, is there anything comparable in the farm equipment world where someone has anything like this besides John Deere?
That's a really good question. I'm not aware of anything really that's comparable. I mean, what I love about what we do here at Deere is there's a little something for everyone. The pavilion is the full history of the company and a lot of current products. So if you want to sit right now, if you want to come sit in an X9 combine, you can do that at the pavilion. If you want to sit in a wheel loader or something, you can do that at the pavilion. At the Tractor and Engine Museum in Waterloo, Iowa, it's a full history of John Deere tractors and engines through the 1970s in a building where we actually made a lot of those tractors. And then you can go to the John Deere Historic Site, and that's actually the home of John Deere in the 1830s and 40s. There's a museum built on top of the archaeological excavation of his original blacksmith shop. And we actually even have working blacksmiths in a replica blacksmith shop on site. So really very different experiences, and I think a little bit of something for everyone.
I would tell you that I grew up very much a John Deere family. There's a little more diversity on the farm these days than there maybe once was. But if you are someone who grows up with fond memories of John Deere as part of your life, I would say this is almost like your Disney World in order to see all of these sites. And they just sound fantastic, Neil.
Yeah, we actually hear that a lot. That's a fair comparison, I think.
Well, for folks to want to find out more about you, about what you do at John Deere, and I know you are available for speaking from time to time as well, how can folks find you, Neil? You have a very rich history yourself.
Yeah, the easiest way is probably just neildahlstrom.com. That's my website. You can send me a note. I try to be pretty easy to find. So that's probably the easiest way to get a hold of me. And depending on what people's questions are, if it's something related to John Deere history, I may send you to someone else here in the archives who has a different area of expertise. That's kind of the advantage of working here, is lots of people have different types of expertise. And so I'm not the lone expert. Typically, I'm reaching out to other people saying, what do you know about this? Or what kind of research have you done in this area?
Well, kindly let me know when I can grow up to be your intern, or when you're going to start a podcast about all those cool things at John Deere history, because I can't wait to be a part of them.
All right. It's a deal.
Thank you for joining us today, Neil. We greatly appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Neil. All right. Well, when we come back, we will hit a couple more ag topics, and we'll also talk weather about the snow that's coming in, not only this weekend, but Bridget, I'm going to take a look down the pike about, let's go out 2 weeks. According to the LRC, I think our snowmobiler friends will like what I have to say. So we'll have those details coming up after the break. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus, 1:53 in the afternoon. And temperatures out there not feeling like the end of January, with temperatures currently in the mid-30s in the FM area. Now, it is a little cooler in the Northern Valley in northwest Minnesota, where temperatures are in the 20s and a little bit of fog up there as well. So, boy, it really depends where you're at. If you're in the Northern Valley or northwest Minnesota, it's like, hey, wait a minute. We're not seeing any sun. But central Southern Valley into Lakes Country, a beautiful day for this time of the year. And we'll tick it up a few more degrees, and then again, we're keeping an eye on colder weather, and then a clipper system coming our way over the weekend. Now, this isn't going to be a huge storm by any means. I'm thinking an inch or two. Some spots might get a little bit more than that. It's the wind on Sunday that's going to pose the problem. We'll see some blowing snow and slippery roads and all that good stuff. So if you have any travel plans on Sunday, just keep that in the back of your mind. We'll fine-tune the forecast as we head into Friday. But let's take a look long-term, Bridget, because, I mean, let's see here. Okay, so we're at 13.4 inches of snow for the season. We're 16 inches below normal. Now, compared to last year up to this date, we had 7 inches of snow. So we're about double where we were last year, but we're still well, well behind. Now, taking a look at all of our long-term models and then comparing that with the LRC, in terms of how many storms we have coming here through mid-month, because right now we're in the stormy part of the LRC cycle. And now is when we need to get our moisture and our precip, because after, let's say, the third week of the month, then we cycle back into the dry part of the LRC cycle. Not saying we won't get any precip during the dry period, but drier than normal. So that would put us wet through about the third, let's say about the 21st of this month. Then we go into about a 20-day or almost a three-week dry period, which would put us into mid-March before we turn stormy, get in the stormy part of the cycle again. So according to the LRC and all of our long-range models, by about the 21st of the month, we'll have about two or three storm systems rolling through here, with the biggest one coming towards mid-month. And by about the 18th, 19th of this month, we're getting strong indications of anywhere, and I know this is a wide range, anywhere between 8 and 16 inches of snowpack across much of the area. So that's good news for our snowmobiler friends, and temperatures should remain pretty close to or below normal for the most part through that time period. So we'll add to the snowpack as we head into mid-month, and that looks to be pretty darn good news.
Well, yeah, we're going to see what that looks like. You know, eventually we're going to have to move all that snow. We're getting close to calving, so people are right. Want that to happen before we have calves starting mm-hmm. to hit the ground. Some folks may already be having calves at that time. It's just a matter of how things shake out. The week you're talking about is the International Crop Expo that happens in Grand Forks at the Alaris Center. So that may put some travel considerations in front of folks before they travel to that meeting.
Right.
So keep that in mind as well, is mm-hmm. where you might be heading and doing.
Yeah.
Yes.
But we need the moisture. And I mean, the lack of snow is obvious. And, you know, let's get that moisture at least on the top layer. And then when we do our slow melt into spring, you know, get that to kind of soak in. And we're not too far behind on moisture on the year, but we're definitely far behind on snowfall, without a doubt.
Well, it's been a bit of a changeover than what we have seen 2 years ago, for sure. Last year, not quite as much.
No.
Yeah. So, you know, one thing, too, that I want to mention, Neil was talking about his book, Tractor Wars. There is also a documentary that was done with Iowa PBS based on the book and a lot of this information. And I was just scrolling through that on their website. You can watch it for free. You have to download that app. Again, that's for the Iowa Prairie Public, Iowa PBS. Ours is Prairie Public. Theirs has a different name. But nonetheless, you can watch Neil's discussion about Tractor Wars and what was happening back in that time frame, or you can order his book, which the amount of books I have ordered as of late because of authors we have had on our show, that's a big stack.
Yeah.
It's sort of rivaling furniture at this point, the size of the stack. It's kind of big. So, yes. And when I mentioned calving earlier, we're also getting so much closer to foaling for some horses. Some, you know, cows, we kind of do it in cycle and sync all together at one time. Horses can come anytime. There actually is a device now that can be placed in the horse that can help you determine when that foal is going to come. So when the activity starts for the horse, it'll send an alert to your phone so that you realize that your horse is going into labor, which is important. Horses are fairly high dollar animals these days too.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, we want to thank everybody for joining us here on Weather and Ag in Focus today. For Bridget, myself, a big thank you. We'll see you tomorrow. Don't go anywhere though. The Jay Thomas Show is coming up next.